RadioInfluence.com. The future is now.
Why, Crusher, it's good to see you.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
And welcome to Crush Performance, everybody. Jeff Crushell here, the con man behind the glass, keeping us on track. And we're your weekly source for performance information. Listen, if you have any questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks for us, get them to us. We love them all. On social media, you can get us on Twitter, at Jeff Crush. On Facebook, Instagram, our YouTube channel, which is turning out to be pretty cool. Just search Crush Performance. Our website, of course, is crushperformance.com. And if you want to get a hold of us there via email, info@crushperformance.com. Listen, we have taken ideas from our question pool and dedicated segments and even entire episodes to the emails you guys have sent in. We answer every single message we get, and we love them. So here's what I could tell you. If we don't have the answer, I can guarantee we know somebody who does have the answer. So if you have questions about your performance, injuries, your kids, your program, your organization, let us know. We're just here to help share information and help out if we can, for sure. Today, I just got back from a pretty major trip here. I went down to Curacao for Major League Baseball, and on the way home, made a stop off in Arizona. Fall league's just getting underway, but we had our international team there for Major League Baseball, and this was a long one. So I apologize. My voice is a little rough. The travel was pretty wicked, but it's a long time away, doing a lot of coaching and screaming and yelling, and it was a ton of fun. Curacao is an interesting project. 170,000 people on the island. And they love baseball. The kids can play. So it was a lot of fun working with everybody there to put together the start of a developmental pathway for the players there and sharing information with all the clubs and coaches around the island. Fantastic stuff. And then the stop in Arizona was really interesting. 31 players from 11 different countries brought there by Major League Baseball for a college recruiting tour. Now, it's pretty interesting because it wasn't too long ago that you might even safely say Major League Baseball and the NCAA and college programs were at odds with each other, all working to try to find the best talent and players for their organizations. And it was a bit of push and shove. So this is just a tremendous, tremendous turn. Not only for the organizations in Major League Baseball and, of course, the colleges, but for the players. I think everybody has now realized that if a player's not quite ready for the professional level of sport, college is such a great, great option. And that has a trickle-down effect because now we're seeing the developmental programs that are popping up, the high school academies, the after-school high-performance programs, really emphasizing education as a pathway to the higher levels of sport and baseball. And I think it's a model that a lot of other sports might have gotten to a little sooner. Some are still working on, but it's definitely something we'll keep our eye on, no question. But the tour down in Arizona was fantastic. Some kids signed pro, some kids already got some college scholarships, and Major League Baseball is just doing a great job there as they realize the importance of that extra time to get really quality competition. You know, some of these kids come from areas where baseball is not a main sport, and the best athletes aren't playing the game. So for those athletes to come over and get the experience at the college level where everybody's throwing 90 and every error counts and is critical, and it really can change the approach to the game. So on that end, it's really cool. Giving the kids a little time to get accustomed to the North American culture. Away from home for the first time, the food is different. Time zones, the culture is different. What's on television is different. How you drive your cars and how you get around is different than a lot of other places in the world. So the college route is becoming more and more important, and it's so great to see Major League Baseball really encouraging athletes to go that route. So what a treat. But it was a great trip, very rewarding, but I apologize for my voice today. So let's just get through it the best we can because a really cool show today. It's an event-driven show. I'm just coming off a great event. But I always have my ear to the ground. I'm always looking and listening to see what's going on in the world. And once in a while, you catch wind of a project or event or a story that catches your eye or your attention. And that's what today's all about. So why don't we start with the pro sports? They've always got our attention, it seems, but maybe right now, some more so than others. Of course, the NFL is interesting to watch right now. The NHL kicking off to see who gets off to a good start. We have the NBA rumbling to life here. But Major League Baseball, are you kidding me? I think for the first time in a long, long time, we have four legitimate best teams in a sport facing off in a very, very important series coming up. The Red Sox and the Astros, the Dodgers and the Braves. All four, bragger's rights here, all four teams that I was watching this year at the start of the season, and of course, every major season, we look at teams, players, and storylines to watch, and all four of these teams were on my radar, though I did not predict the Red Sox to do what they did. The Astros and the Red Sox. The first 100-win versus 100-win team matchup since 1977, where the Yankees played Kansas City Royals. The Yankees had 100 wins that year. Kansas City had 102. The Astros this year had 103 wins, which is a club record. The Red Sox also had a club record at 108 wins, which, by the way, is the 12th highest of any team since the 1900s. So really, really incredible performances throughout the season and the postseason right now for both teams as they head off. This is truly the Battle of the Titans. 211 combined wins, which is one short of the 1998 record where the Yankees and the Padres faced off. And then in the National League, you have the Brewers facing the Dodgers. Without question, the two best teams in that league, another Battle of the Titans. So it couldn't be any better setting up for the postseason in Major League Baseball as the next round gets underway. Series of seven now, so this is the real deal, and it's going to be fun to watch. Event-driven sport, I just absolutely love it. And there's a couple of other events that have caught my attention that I wanted to share with you today because I think they're fairly important. Coming up next in the show, we're going to talk with Shane Fennessy, the co-producer of Making Coco, the Grant Fuhr story. I want to get behind the scenes and talk to Shane about the, I guess, storyline and the history of the project, how it all came together, what the story is all about, and what the audience can expect. They've had an absolute amazing response so far to the show. So we're going to talk to Shane about that. That's coming up next. And then later in the show, there is a very important sports medicine conference coming up, and I'm always interested in this stuff, especially when it helps us have a better understanding of player and player health. It's the 5th annual Glenn Sather Sports Medicine Clinic Conference, talking about lower limb, return to play injuries, hip and groin, and the holistic approach to injury prevention and return to play. So, so important. We're going to talk with Enda King, chartered physiotherapist and head of performance rehabilitation in the sports surgery clinic from Ireland, about the post-conference workshop he's going to put on and what we can expect to learn at this incredible event. So today we're talking events on Crush Performance. Coming up next, Making Coco, the Grant Fuhr story. Stick around.
This is Crush Performance. If you have questions, comments, or smart remarks, write to us at crushperformance.com.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Crush Performance. Jeff Crochelle here. Listen, if you want to get in touch with us, questions, comments, smart remarks, as the man said, CrushPerformance.com is the website. Get our newsletter, subscribe to the podcast, or send us any questions you might have. Info@CrushPerformance.com is the email. If you have a topic you'd like us to look into, if you have a question you'd like us to answer, let us know. We answer every message we get. And honestly, we've had some really, really good questions, some great thoughts, and some great ideas that have come through the email, across the social media platforms. And honestly, they've driven ideas for show content. We've dedicated segments, even entire episodes, to some of the ideas. But the bottom line is we answer every question that we get. If we don't have the answer, I could tell you this. We know somebody who has the answer and we'll dig for you. So get to us for sure. Today, an event-driven show. Once in a while, you catch wind of something that piques your interest or catches your attention and you want to look into it a little further. This is one of those. And not so much because I know some of the people involved and really, really respect the work they do. Because when I first heard about it, I didn't know a lot about it, didn't know who was involved, but it piqued my interest. I caught wind of it, believe it or not, on my Twitter feed. I'm just really getting into the social media and I don't really look at it that often, but I got a quick glimpse of this and it caught my interest. And then I saw it again on LinkedIn from somebody that I really know and respect. And I'm going, hey, this sounds like a really interesting project. And so I started looking into it. It's called Making Coco, the Grant Fuhr story. And anytime I hear about this sort of a thing, I just kind of get the feeling that there's probably more to this than meets the eye, and that is most definitely the case. I started looking into it, tracked it down online. I found the trailer. I looked at who is the driving forces behind this project, and no question about it, it's something special for sure. It's called Making Coco, the Grant Fear Story, and joining us right now is Shane Fennessy, the co-producer. Shane, thanks for joining us today.
Crush, thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, I'm really, really excited about this, the Grant Fuhr story. Before we get into this incredible storyline of how this came together, let's give our listeners a little background on you and how you got involved in this incredible project.
Well, my background is kind of a circuitous story. I've done a lot of different things in my life, but I worked in hockey for a good portion of it. And then I took some time off and kind of got into big Alberta industry, and the oil sands kind of called my name, but 2 years into that and kind of shook my head and said, this isn't for me. I'm uninspired, you know, unmotivated, and I got to find something that really, you know, ignites my curiosity, let's say. So actually a good friend of mine from Edmonton here, Michael Max, just called me one day when I was looking for a new thing and said, hey, why don't you get into the film business? I think you'd be great at it. And so I said, yeah, that sounds awesome, but I don't know anything about the film business. And he goes, come on, you've got the personality, you've got the skills, and you know and love the city. I've got a little video for the Oilers that needs producing, and I think you'd be great for it. So if anyone remembers, it was the season opener at Rogers Place, the Thank You Fans video. I produced that, and that was my first kind of foray into this multimedia entertainment world. And from there, moved down to Calgary for 3 months and worked on a TV show that was licensed and sold in the States. And then came back and worked on Mike Maxis's movie in town called Puppy Love, which was a $3.5 million indie film shot in Edmonton here. So we had stars like Sean Penn's son, Hopper Penn, was our lead, Michael Madsen, Rosanna Arquette, and Wayne Newton even had a cameo in it. So here I am 9 months into the industry, and I'm sitting across from Wayne Newton interviewing him for a behind-the-scenes EPK. And it's one of those moments you kind of have to shake your head and go, is this real life right now? So, you know, that was a hell of a ride. And then from there, met our producer, Adam Scorgi, just through a random chain of events. Actually used his kid in the Oilers video, and unbeknownst to me, he was in the film business. And then we started talking about the Grant Project, and I'm good family friends with Don Metz, and he was directing for us. So we kind of sat down, the three of us, and discussed the project, and then the rest is history. I mean, that was a year and a half ago, and here we are premiering it in three different cities over the course of a month and a half.
Wow. Now that is a ride. That is one heck of a ride. And isn't it funny how opportunities can kind of creep up? And there's a deeper story here, of course, you know, just looking at what's happened with you personally. You know, we talk sport and sport performance and athlete development here on the show on a weekly basis. And, you know, we talk about opportunities, creating opportunities. Sometimes you never know, right, Shane?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like they say, people call it luck, but really, like, you've got to have preparation and meet that opportunity at the same time. It's just be ready and grab it when it comes your way.
Right. Well, let's talk about this incredible project, Making Coco, the Grant Fuhr story. Okay, how did this come across your table, and how did it come together originally? You are the co-producer of this great, great story that I think resonates well beyond the sport of hockey.
Before I even got involved, there was a book written on Grant, but it was quite a bit different than the background of this movie. It was his career based on, I think, 7 or 8 of his most famous games. And so that kind of sparked the interest of Don Metz and Adam Scorgi on Grant. And, you know, looking back, that was the Oilers of the 80s were such a remarkable team. And you've got guys like Gretz, Coff, Curry, Anderson, Mess always getting the spotlight. And, you know, Grant had his sort of his camp of fans, but no one really looked at Grant as the reason that those guys won. But you ask any of them and they come back and say, look, Grant is the reason that we were able to play that we did, because we knew if we were 5 of us up the ice and we let, you know, one on a breakaway or a 2-on-0 on Grant, he had a pretty good chance of saving it. So we really felt it was important to get Grant his due. And to tell this remarkable story of adversity, which a lot of people don't know how much he went through in his life. And I don't want to give too much in the spoiler, but you know, he's had a hard life, and his attitude throughout it has been the same. And I think it's the attitude that everyone needs in life, is it's just like stuff happens and you need to push through and just come to the job site and do your job. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah, no, such a storied history. We're talking with Shane Fennessy, co-producer of the great film Making Coco, the Grant Fuhr story. And this is a story for the ages. There's no doubt about it. I mean, being the first black superstar in hockey, he won 403 regular season games. He was a key pivotal piece of that incredible Oilers NHL team through the early 80s. And if we go back through, you know, his accolades as a goaltender, he not only broke down barriers, but he really was, you know, maybe we could, for baseball fans, you know, who are listening, we can maybe compare him to like a Tony Fernandez, who sort of reinvented the middle infield for baseball. I think Grant Fuhr, would it be fair to say, sort of recreated what goaltending is all about?
Yeah, I mean, no one had a style like Grant. You ask anyone who watched him play back in the day, and there's countless goalies who say, I modeled my style after Grant. And it was, you know, pure athleticism that that enabled him to do it. I mean, you wouldn't be a fan of hearing this, which I'm sure you know already, but, you know, Grant wasn't the biggest advocate of going to the gym or eating a healthy diet. So it was just this amazing innate talent that enabled him to play like he did, and his drive and his competitiveness. And, you know, as far as kind of forging ahead as the first black superstar in hockey, I mean, yeah, the first black guy in the Hall of Fame, and now Willie O'Ree is in as a builder, which is fantastic. But you talk to the list of guys that said they were inspired by Grant to play, like Jerome McGinley, a guy from St. Albert, was a bat boy for Grant's summer baseball teams and was just idolized this guy. And Grant, Jerome was always a good hockey player, but and he would tell people, I want to be a pro hockey player. And they would say, yeah, Jerome, you know, that's great, you're good, but there's no black superstars in the NHL. And he would say, like, are you kidding me? Like, look at Grant Fuhr. How can you not see him right there? And I think because Grant had a mask on that a lot of people didn't quite realize that he was a black player, but the guys who were paying attention really were inspired, and it drove them to, you know, to big heights.
Yeah, we're talking with Shane Fennessy, the co-producer of Making Coco. Well, let's talk about the cast of characters behind this whole incredible film. What a list of sporting superstars. And not just the athletes themselves. We're talking sporting executives, renowned reporters, speaking the truth, and very candid interviews as well. Tell us a bit about what we might expect to see at the show.
Well, I mean, you've got the obvious cast. You've got Wayne, you've got Mark, you've got Paul Coffey, you've got, you know, Glenn Anderson. And then, you know, the guys that really excited me were sort of the St. Louis guys, because I didn't know as much about Grant's story there. And obviously, being an Edmonton guy, you run into the old Edmonton alumni. But the St. Louis trip was kind of a special experience because we had guys like Brett Hall, Martin Brodeur, Kelly Chase, Jamie Rivers, Al MacInnis, who is an interesting story because he played against Grant both in Calgary or against Grant in Calgary and then with him in St. Louis. And he tells a story about remembering the day that Grant got traded to Toronto. And he says, I cheered. I was driving my car and I just like cheered for joy because we no longer had to face the notorious Grant Fuhr. And then some really cool, like, you know, lesser known guys. Like a guy, I mean, Michael Claiborne's a famous Cardinals broadcaster in St. Louis, but he's a huge hockey fan as well. And he just gives us a really cool insight into, you know, when you're a St. Louis fan and you get a 34-year-old goalie traded to your team, and with five Stanley Cups, you're not sure. Are you getting a 34-year-old washed-up guy who just bounced around the league for 3 years? Or are you getting a former you know, Vezina Trophy winner and future Hall of Famer. So it was really interesting to get those different takes from people.
Yeah, isn't that incredible how the span of a career impacts, you know, multiple organizations, but communities as well. So I think that's an interesting take, not knowing what happened in St. Louis. And I think a lot of players are like that. If we look at the NHL, when free agency came around, these were guys who were guns for hire, mercenaries, so to speak, traveling from town to town. So I think that's a pretty interesting perspective, Shane.
Well, I mean, a lot of people don't realize the legacy that Grant's left around the league. Like, everyone remembers him for his Edmonton days, and the fans of St. Louis, who are huge hockey fans, I have to say. I had no idea that it would be like that when we went down to St. Louis. But they know how great Grant was and his legacy. But, you know, keep in mind, Grant mentored a young Billy Ranford in Edmonton and then goes to Toronto and mentors a young Felix Potvin and then goes to Buffalo and mentors, not a young, but a new into the league, Dominic Hasek. And then he goes to L.A. and plays with Kelly Rudy. They're about the same age, I believe. We heard a story that Kelly was not playing so well that year until Grant showed up, and that kind of kicked his ass into gear. And he was sort of, you know, oh, I got to play now because I've got five Stanley Cups riding behind me. And if I don't perform, he's coming in. So that was really neat. And then, of course, you know, a story that most people don't know is it's really, you know, Wayne Gretzky's doing that Grant ended up in St. Louis. He ran into Mike Keenan in the offseason, and Keenan was unsure of a young Curtis Joseph. And he said, you know, what about Grant Fuhr? And Wayne says, are you kidding me? Of course. Grant's your guy. Like, he's 34, but he'll play for you until his limbs fall off. So another hat tip to Grant Fuhr, because he sent Cujo to Edmonton that year because he came in.
Great stuff. We're talking with Shane Fennessy, co-producer of Making Coco, the Grant Fuhr story. One of the things that I thought was interesting, Shane, and this, again, is something that I think all hockey fans and young aspiring players should pay attention to. Some of the comments on the trailer from Glenn Sather about how he really wasn't impressed with Grant Fuhr upon first seeing him. But then he, you know, much like your story, incredible things can happen if you just get the opportunity.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, Grant was, he was a good goalie for most of his career, but even good goalies have bad games. And it just, you know, it happened that the two games that Slats watched Grant play, he laid an egg, as he says. And, you know, luckily, I think the important thing to keep in mind is people are always watching, right? So even though Sather only saw those two games, Barry Fraser, the Oilers head scout, had watched Grant play 80, 90 times. So, you know, you can't let a couple bad performances really, you know, get you down, because it's everything that led up to that that got you where you are. So I think it's important to shake off those bad performances and you know, just focus on the next one is all you can do.
Yep, no question. Well, you know, with the social media platforms and incredible projects like this, I think we get a better understanding of what these people are all about. They're athletes, they're superstars in their sports, they're very, very special for what they've accomplished, but at the end of the day, they're people with people issues, dealing with a bunch of things on top of being superstars in their sports, and that's kind of what the story's all about.
Well, you're seeing that now more than ever, and the acceptability of coming out and say, hey, we're human beings and we've got issues. And, you know, just because it didn't come out as much back then doesn't mean it never happened. And there's a good story of something that happened to Grant, and I won't ruin it for everyone who wants to go see the movie, but it's just, you know, it really humanizes these guys quite a bit. And it's a tearjerker. There's moments that the audience is in tears. There's moments that the audience is laughing. And I think, like, especially with these high profile athletes, you can idolize them and just totally forget the human element. And, you know, a great example would be Cam Talbot from last season. Like, people forget he had a brand new set of twins. He had a bad season. Like, that kind of makes sense. And, yeah, people will say, you know, they're getting paid millions of dollars to perform, but money only makes a difference up until a certain point. Once you surpass the level that you basically don't have to look at the price on a menu, you're comfortable. And anything over and above that doesn't increase happiness. Once you no longer have to worry. So, you know, it's these inside looks into people's lives that I think really make them relatable and motivate and inspire people to push through the bad things that happen in their life.
Shane, totally appreciate your time today. I know this is a very busy schedule for you and an incredibly exciting time. For all of our listeners who are hockey fans and beyond, how can they learn more about this and how can they see it? Because I think this is a very important project in general, in the big picture.
So all our social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, is all Making Coco. The best place to go to get information on the film right now, as it stands, is rogersplace.com. There's a separate page for the film. You can watch the trailer, you can read the press release, and that's also where you can get tickets. Ticket sales have been going really, really well. There's tickets left. And for people who don't know, we're premiering this on October 17th at Rogers Place. OEG, the Oilers Entertainment Group, has been a great partner in helping us set everything up. It's going to be a spectacular night. So some people have a misinterpretation of us premiering it at Rogers Place. It's not the whole stadium. It's not 18,000 people, although maybe we could have sold that many tickets. But what it is it's a new reverse configuration that's going to see quite a bit less than 18,000, but quite a bit more than a normal movie theater.
Great stuff. It is going to be intimate and incredible event, and I can't wait for people to see it here in Edmonton and beyond, no question. Shane, thanks for coming on today, and congratulations on all the success and the accolades received so far on the project.
Hey, Crush, really appreciate you having me on and giving some love to the project, and hope to see you and the rest of the city there. I mean, it's going to be a great opportunity for Edmonton fans to watch some good hockey, because our current team isn't performing too well. And then after the film, also hear from Grant and some very special teammates of his. So we're looking forward to it.
Well, all the best with that big event in Edmonton, back on the home stomping grounds of the early 1980 Edmonton Oilers, and the, I guess, kickoff of the story of Making Coco, the Grant Fuhr story. Incredible. Well, not only is that incredible, Shane's story is incredible. Just never give up. There's so many great things in this conversation. I want to thank Shane again for that. The event, again, coming up in Edmonton on October 17th. I can't wait to see it. After that, I'll be hitting more mainstream media, so keep your eyes open. This is a story that I believe has implications well beyond sport. This is real life, especially when we talk about the fact that, hey, look, these guys are on a pedestal. They've done something special. They're superstars, but they're real people at the end of the day. I really like what Shane said about the money thing. It only goes so far. Once you get beyond that, there's real life to deal with. And sometimes that's even amplified more in the world of high-performance sports. So congratulations to everybody involved in that project. We're looking forward to it. All right, there was another event that sort of caught my eye, piqued my interest. I had to look into it a little bit more. It's the 5th Annual David C. Reed Glenn Sather Sports Medicine Clinic Conference. This is an annual event looking at some of the really important issues in sports medicine in terms of athlete health, rehabilitation, and cutting-edge information. This year is no exception. The theme this year is issues of the lower limb. Some really, really great speakers coming in to share information and educate people in that area. And then a two-day post-conference workshop with Enda King, who is a chartered physiotherapist and the head of performance rehabilitation in the sports surgery clinic from Ireland, talking about lower limb injuries. And in particular, return to play strategies, looking at hip and groin issues, and the idea that we need to get away from isolating some of these issues and looking at the whole picture, the big picture. A really interesting conversation coming up with Enda King right after this on Crush Performance.
You're listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
All right, welcome back to Crush Performance, everybody. Jeff Kershaw here. And I'm just getting back from a really big trip with Major League Baseball. I was down in Curacao helping build the program there, the athlete development. Some great, great talent on that island. And baseball is a big sport there. So it's very interesting to get involved in a country that has such a deep history in the sport of baseball and is now looking to really put together developmental pathways for their young athletes. It'll be fun to watch that country and the opportunities they create for their young athletes. And then I was off to Arizona after that for our sort of international all-star team. The Major League Baseball sort of academy players from around the world. 31 players from 11 different countries brought in for a college recruiting tour by Major League Baseball, which is just such a great thing. It wasn't too long ago that Major League Baseball and the NCAA and college programs were kind of at odds because they all wanted to get the players into their systems as quickly as possible on the college side to help those teams win, and on the baseball side to help them develop over the long term. And it was sort of a butting heads sort of a relationship. But now, Major League Baseball has really seen the value of getting kids through college, getting them some great competition, more games, and some time to mature. And at the same time, colleges are also combing the earth now for great talent, a lot of opportunities for international players, which is exciting as well. So being down in Arizona, just as Fall League kicks off with our group of international coaches from all over the world and players from all over the world being hosted by some of the professional teams in Arizona. They were at the Kansas City Complex, Diamondbacks. They went over to the Cubs. Just really great experience for these young players. They also got to tour a couple of the colleges, ASU being one of them as well.
and now they're competing in a big college tournament down there. Some kids have signed pro. Some kids have also gotten scholarships. So just a great, but it was a long haul. So my voice is a little rough today. Screaming and yelling, teaching and cheering on the guys down there was a lot of fun, but really rewarding. And I apologize for my voice today. Very tired. Just got in the other day. But regardless, today we're talking a bit about events. And we just got done talking with Shane Fennessy, the co-producer of Making Coco, the Grant Fuhr story. I sort of caught wind of that on social media, looked into it, and what an incredible story with some really, really interesting people involved. Make sure you guys look for that one online and through the various media platforms as it sort of goes mainstream after their big event, October 17th in Edmonton. And I also caught wind of another great event. I'm always looking for information on athlete performance, injury prevention, the cutting edge in rehab, return to play. And I caught wind of a great conference that's coming up here later in October. October 20th, to be exact. It's the 5th annual David C. Reed Glenn Sather Sports Medicine Clinic Conference. The theme is Issues of the Lower Body. They have a bunch of great speakers. They have Dr. Robert Magnuson from Ohio State, Dr. Jonathan Finoff from the Mayo Clinic Sports Medicine, and Enda King is going to join the conference as well. He is a chartered physiotherapist and the head of performance rehabilitation in the sports surgery clinic from Ireland, doing some very innovative things. His area of specialty is the ACL and knee injuries. But they're going to do a two-day workshop after the conference talking about ACL rehabilitation, return-to-play decision-making, which is critically important at every single level of sport. They're also going to look at athletic hip and groin pain, which really transfers into a multitude of sports. So we reached out to the good people at the Glenn Sather Sports Medicine Clinic to see if we couldn't contact Enda to come on and talk about some of the research he's doing and how important it is in professional sport, most certainly, but also in the developmental levels where we're seeing a lot of the knee injuries happen. So I'm very happy to say we're joined now by Enda King, chartered physiotherapist and head of performance rehabilitation in the sports surgery clinic in Ireland. Enda, thanks for joining the show today. It's great to have you on.
Not at all. Absolute pleasure.
Great. So you are currently at the sports surgery clinic in Ireland. So I know there's a bit of a time change here, but you are making your way over to Canada here to share some knowledge. I guess maybe we'll start with this. Being really interested in sporting cultures, I know there's a bit of a difference sometimes in mindset and approach between the European approach and the North American approach. Have you seen that in your time in sport, and what are you expecting as you cross the pond to come over to North America here?
Yeah, I suppose both in terms of Ireland and Europe, that there is a lot of professional sport in North America in comparison, and not only that, but there's also huge numbers in terms of participation. So one of the big things you notice in the sporting and injury culture, I suppose, this side of the pond is that elite players are a more finite resource. We tend to manage our resources as we don't have as many elite players as they would have in North America, and therefore when you're injured or you have issues, often you can be much easier replaced at that side of the water. And so in terms of that, the sports are probably quite more indigenous in terms of hockey and American football, etc., as opposed to more global sports in terms of rugby and soccer that we would have this side of the water.
You know, it's interesting, and you know, we have a big issue here in North America for sure, and I'm starting to see it in other parts of the world for sure, but you know, we have this culture of specialization, early specialization. Kids get trapped almost into a sport, and I think it's causing problems later in their careers. Are you seeing similar things in Ireland and in Europe there?
Yes, I mean, and especially in individual sports like tennis and golf and gymnastics, and there is a certain requirement for some sports for early specialization like swimming that needs a physiological adaptation. But for the majority of field sports, especially you see soccer in the UK and in Ireland, where kids have been drafted into academies at 4, 5, 6 and really not getting that exposure across a broad range of sports, that obviously, number one, limits their athletic development and how good they can become as a general athlete. But increasingly, the research is supporting the fact that their injury risk and their injury profile is hugely modified. So, you know, the more they watch sport, and especially elite sport on television, the more they aspire to be like their heroes, and the earlier they narrow down their direction of the sport that their or their parents narrow down, the sports that they're participating in, when actually, if they could keep it as broad as possible for as long as possible, it often ends up in resulting in a better athlete.
Yeah, and I think that's a message we're trying to send here, in a real powerful message. And it's interesting to see the progression in sport and some of the advances we've made. You did your master's in 2005 in manipulative therapy, and I think this is an area in terms of injury rehabilitation, return to play, and just keeping athletes healthy. This is a real important area of focus for not just our professional athletes, but at the grassroots level as well, where they might not get the same treatment or access to treatment. But I think the way therapy has changed over the last few years has been very interesting to follow.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose I've always aspired to have elite practice and best world practice in terms of what I do and what we do with my colleagues. And so we went to Perth in Australia, where much of the best research in the area has been carried out, and some of the worst, some of the most world-class clinicians were operating and lecturing. And I suppose we try very much here in the clinic and in general to take a multifaceted approach around being, make sure we're very competent in our anatomical diagnosis, that we're complementing that with manual therapy and manipulation where needed, but then putting a huge focus on exercise prescription and strength and conditioning, that we're really being accurate in a diagnosis and that we're restoring normal function, and then redeveloping the athletes back to the highest level of performance as quickly as possible. And if we focus too much, often in professions we can become narrowed around, you know, maybe it's injection therapy or just manual only therapy or maybe just strength training, that actually the best way to get an athlete back as quickly as possible is taking the best bits of all of these different professions and specialities and combining them either within an individual or in a team of individuals who can provide all the expertise to offer the most elite outcome. And certainly we've tried to expand our services here to include biomechanical analysis that we can offer another level of assessment and rehabilitation on top of that as well.
We're talking with Enda King, chartered physiotherapist and head of the performance rehabilitation in the sports surgery clinic in Ireland. Enda, you mentioned the 3D biomechanics. You are currently doing your PhD, completing it up on 3D biomechanics and return to play decision making. This is such an important area of sport and sport performance, certainly at the world class level, most certainly in the professional level. And I think we need to pay more attention to return to play in the developmental grassroots level as well. Hey, what have you found so far looking at the importance and the use of 3D analysis and 3D biomechanics in return to play decision making?
Yeah, I mean, it's having a huge influence on outcomes, and really around three particular areas. Number one is athletes are returning to play, but they're not returning to performance, so they're not getting back to play their best. They're not as strong as they were, they're not explosive as they were. So even though they've returned after ACL, are they returning as good, if not better, than they were beforehand? Secondly, there's a number of athletes that are returning with ongoing symptoms in their knees. So again, they're able to get back, they're able to play, but their performance levels are suffering from the need to miss training or for not being able to be as free as they could be. And obviously there's those that go on to second injury. And what we found in our analysis is that both in jump testing, strength and change of direction testing, and strength and power testing, that different variables are associated with each of those three outcomes. So rather than just saying our number one goal is not to re-injure, yeah, but what about not having no knee pain, and what about getting me back playing as well as I was ever playing before? And so the 3D analysis, I suppose, is allowing us to really hone in on individualizing how that athlete moves and then developing a bespoke program for them, as opposed to saying, well, here's my ACL program. Well, we all move slightly differently. We all might react to surgery differently. We might have different levels of weakness and atrophy that occurs either after the injury or after the surgery. And therefore, if we put everyone on the same timeline, are we going to get the best result, and are we going to get the best result as quickly as possible? So it's allowing us to really individualize our approach, but also look at all of the outcomes relating to ACL, especially returning with no pain and returning with a degree of longevity and performance to what we do, as opposed to only saying, well, look, I just don't want to re-injure. When actually, you know, small numbers actually have a second ACL injury when they return.
Yeah, no, very, very important. The old anterior cruciate ligament, the ACL. And how did you wind up focusing on that particular area of performance?
Yeah, I suppose it's like everything else. We're part developed by the environment that we're in. I've been very fortunate to work for the last 10 years in the sports surgery clinic. And we have quite a large number of ACL reconstructions here per year. Our director of medicine, Ray Morn, and his colleagues do about 1,000 ACL reconstructions per year. So when you've that number of athletes coming through, you obviously develop a certain expertise. You get your opportunity to make your mistakes and learn as things go on. But also from a research point of view, you have access to a very large cohort of the same amount of injury. And that allows us to do a degree and a depth of analysis that you just don't get to do in other centres. So I suppose part of it is an interest in this particular area and a return of athletes' performance, but also part of it is the fact that our surgical colleagues are able to produce such vast numbers of subjects for us to work and develop on and to expand our clinical practice.
Yeah, no, and it's interesting to see how it's sort of expanded for you. You have a, I guess, you know, talking with you and reading some of the information that's coming out of the clinic there, really important work on groin pain, hamstring injuries, and low back pain in athletes and how it all ties together. You know, they were right, the old, the thigh bones connected to the leg bone, connected to the ankle bone, and so on, so on. It's really a good analogy at the end of the day for what sport performance is all about.
Absolutely, and we were just having a team meeting today and we're discussing the fact that actually we don't have a hamstring program anymore and we don't have an ACL program. We do a full analysis and we prescribe based on that analysis almost irrespective of what the injury is. That good movement is good movement, and if I'm moving well and I'm strong and I'm powerful, that's going to make me a better athlete as well as reducing my injury risk. And also using outcomes to dictate when an athlete can return to play. I suppose the biggest challenge or frustration that we would have with ACL is that, you know, what does a fully rehabilitated ACL look like? What does the end of the road look like? Or a hamstring or a tendinopathy for that matter. And if I don't know what the end looks like, how can I write the program or how can I see where this athlete sits on the spectrum? So I completely agree. We're moving less and less away from, you know, specific injury rehab programs towards, like, how does this athlete move and how can we optimize what they're doing to get them back?
Yeah, and I think that I really, really like the idea of sort of, as you mentioned there, that reverse engineering. It's something that we even do in terms of performance training and performance planning, but so, so critical in return to play programming.
Absolutely, and this is where, you know, if you have two athletes with the same injury, why does one recover quicker than the other? Anatomically, they're suffering with the same problem. But if we give them the same rehab program, maybe that's what that first athlete needed, but it wasn't what the second athlete needed. So, you know, taking our interventions away from where the pain is coming from and focusing more towards on how they move and how we can create bespoke solutions to optimize outcomes.
Yeah, great stuff. And well, you're making the big trip across the pond. You will be in North America speaking at the 5th annual Glenn Sather Sports Medicine Conference in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. And you're also hosting a 2-day workshop after that, which is sold out, by the way. I know there's a lot of people that are regretting they didn't sign up for that in time, but it's going to be fantastic. The talk is going to be a biomechanical approach to lower limb rehabilitation and athlete development. Your conference and 2-day workshop is going to be looking at ACL rehab, return to play decision making, hip and groin injuries for athletes. A real important event here, and it's been sort of the fifth time that Dr. Reed and the Glenn Sather Sports Medicine Clinic has put this together. How excited are you for this event?
I'm really looking forward to it. As much as a learning opportunity for myself, I mean, the standard of sports medicine rehabilitation in North America and in Canada in particular is fantastic. And so anytime I've ever had any interaction with colleagues in Canadian sports, you know, it's always been a phenomenally enriching process. So I'm really looking forward to it, sharing some of our expertise and some of the, I mean, there's a large number of ACLs and groins already in sport in Canada. So it's not like everyone is not dealing with these problems already, but maybe sharing some of our new unique insights from the research we've been able to do and the cohorts that we've been able to work with.
Yeah, the sharing of knowledge is absolutely critical here. And Andy, you know, one of the things we talk about when we get our hands on this information is how do we get it down to the levels that really count? So I do a lot of work in professional baseball. And, you know, one of the issues we've had, Enda, is the elbow and shoulder injuries over the last few years. And we're looking at trying to, you know, break down and understand better why they're happening. And I think we've got a real strong theme going that these injuries are happening long before players sign professionally. They're happening at the developmental levels. And I think we have a critical window here to start maybe developing our young athletes with more intelligence. Is that something you're seeing with ACLs as well?
Yeah, and with ACLs, and in particular with femoroacetabular impingement and hip issues, that, you know, a lot of the time when they present with issues is in their late teens, early 20s, but a lot of the hip morphological changes are occurring through that early adolescence, either through inappropriate training loads or inappropriate movement patterns. And that's probably very similar to what you're suggesting in terms of throwing sports, that, you know, a lot of these adaptations or maladaptations are happening earlier in the career. and then you're trying to, you know, when the horse is bolted, trying to fix things long after the, you know, those changes have occurred. So it's something that we'd be very familiar with, and it's increasingly what there's a huge attention going on. Going back to what you're talking about, that early specialization is that, you know, creating that broad athletic base for our athletes through their youth and through their adolescence that will make them as robust as possible for the higher demands that come in adult sporting participation.
Oh, fantastic stuff. And looking so forward to meeting you here in October and continuing this conversation. Thanks for your time today. Really, really insightful. And we'll look forward to talking more in the future.
Look forward to meeting you then. Thanks very much.
There you go. Fantastic conversation. A little preview of what's going to be going on at that clinic. That clinic is open for family physicians, physical therapists, other healthcare providers. You can get more information at www.uab.ca/PD. Just search out the Glenn Sather Sports Medicine Clinic if you're interested in attending. I know space is now very, very limited. There's a blockbuster lineup of speakers. And if you're involved in the sporting world, this is going to be a very, very interesting one. We just had a little preview right there. Enda is going to be hosting a two-day workshop after the conference. So a lot of great learning, a lot of great sharing, and that's truly what it's all about. That's what the show is all about. And so I want to thank Enda for joining us today. Shane Fennessy as well, the co-producer of Making Coco, the Grant Fear story, joined us earlier. That's coming up later in October. Make sure you get your tickets for that if you're in the Edmonton area. If not, let's keep our eyes open online because that's going to hit mainstream, I think, media platforms shortly after that. A fantastic story that I think a lot of athletes need to pay attention to. So that'll do it for today, everybody. I want to thank you for tuning in. Coming up in the next few weeks of Crush Performance, we will be talking about dealing with adversity and change. We're seeing a lot of things going on in the world of sport, but again, another conversation that transcends sport and can be applied to anywhere in life for sure. Our good friend, the coach of champions, Jim Fannin, will join us. And then we're going to talk organizational performance and the fact that, hey, could it be humans are underrated? I think we really do underestimate what we're capable of doing at every single level of development in any arena where humans are performing. We're going to talk with senior editor from Fortune magazine, Jeff Colvin, about his book, Humans Are Underrated. That's coming up in the next few weeks in Crush Performance. Again, if you want to reach out to us, questions, comments, smart remarks, crushperformance.com is the website, info@crushperformance. Follow us on Twitter and be sure to share the show. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you next week on Crush Performance.
Don't forget to write. Chris Landry inviting you to join me for Landry Football Podcast every Tuesday and Thursday. We'll give you the coaching and scouting angle to the college and NFL game. Film breakdowns, scouting reports, X's and O's, the latest inside scoop, coaching search information. We've got it all for you. I'll take my experiences as a coach and a scout and bring it to you, the fan, to give you access to the best football information on the college and pro level. Join us at LandryFootball.com and remember the Landry Football Podcast right here, as well as Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.